Welcome to Jeffrey Wright and Company. My name is Jeffrey Wright. You can follow me on Twitter, on X, at JWright929ESPN. As always, you can listen on the radio dial, 92.9 FM, 680 AM. But if you're away from the radio and you want to stay up to date on all the great content happening here at the station, you can download the Odyssey app. Free to download, free to listen. All you got to do is just download the Odyssey app, subscribe, and listen today. Dennis Fuller producing the program for us. Glad that he is with us. My company, as he is each and every Thursday on the program. He writes about college football, college basketball for CBSSports.com. You can occasionally hear him on the CBS Sports College Eye on College Basketball podcast, which, of course, had a billboard in Manhattan, virtual billboard in Manhattan. He's on Twitter, on X, at David W. Cobb. Cobb, congratulations on being famous.
Yeah, no, thank you. Obviously, you know, huge deal for me to have my two coworkers be featured on a billboard for their show that I occasionally appear on like four times a year. So, you know, big things happening, man. Big things.
Of course, our former coworker here, Gary Parrish, of course, the Eye on College Basketball podcast. Of course, you can listen, subscribe. Is it still 3 days a week?
Oh yeah, yeah, they're pretty regular with it. Matt Norlander is as regimented as anyone who you will find in the media industry. If you move something off an hour, boy, he gets all out of sorts. So yeah, they're regimented 3 days a week. This is a great time of year to be diving in. By the way, we got a lot of content up at CBS Sports in the college basketball realm. Jerry Palm's picking up his bracketology. You see the Memphis Tigers featured over there every day. So yeah, this is where we make our money, man. It's CBS's time to shine once you get through college football.
Yeah,
college basketball.
I was about to say this is big, getting back into college basketball season.
It's fun. It's a fun sport this year. You got a lot of freshman infusion of energy, right? So yeah, you still got the last of the COVID guys. They're still hanging around, but even with those guys still around, freshmen are making contributions across the sport. Duke is looking really good. The SEC is just loaded. So I think it's going to be a really fun ride. I think these next 2 months are going to be really, really, really top-notch college basketball action.
Let's see what we got coming up on the program over also at CBS Sports and ESPN. ESPN has handed out midseason grades for NBA teams. They gave the Grizzlies an A, Kevin Pelton, although Kevin would be the first to say Kevin's computer gave it an A. He's very good at detaching himself, so his computer gave him an A. Also, the Grizzlies over at CBSSports.com in the latest power rankings, coming up fifth in the league. So we'll talk to Cobb and I will discuss, you know, just indeed how we feel like this season has been going. We handed out our own midseason grades last week on the program, but I kind of wanted to discuss maybe a little bit of the difference between the national view of the Grizzlies and the local view, discuss that. We also got the official ratings. We yesterday got ESPN's version of the ratings from the College Football National Championship game. We found out today that it's down 12% from last year's championship game. Cobb and I will discuss whether or not that actually tells us anything. We want to talk through that. Eric Astine going to join us as he does each and every Thursday on the program. We'll get his thoughts on the Grizzlies. We'll get into the list during hour number two. Also, Jason Smith going to join the program. Cobb's got a list over at CBSSports.com of players. We're calling it the ghost list. So it's players that you could technically have on your roster, but that have transferred elsewhere. So I want to discuss that with Jason, if whether or not we think that the Tigers could be using some of the guys that they had and they ended up losing to the portal. So discuss that with him. Tell your story and get out of here. So I think let's start first, Cobb, with the Grizzlies. So the Grizzlies last night, after being up 30 in the second half, they honestly might have been up 32. I know they were at least up 30 in the second half. If you are out there and you had Grizzlies minus 12.5, because I heard by tip-off the line had moved that much, and then the Grizzlies win by 12, like, I just want to, like, hug you. Because that's one of the ones that there's certain types of beats where you're like, man, if I had that, like, I think I would quit gambling for 20 minutes. But that was one that I just wanted to hug them, because that's a game the Grizzlies should have won by at least 20, but certainly not 12. I did think it was a little interesting. Post-game, and Cobb, I don't know how much post-game coverage you consumed. They were pissed about how that game ended and how it finished. And I just kind of think it's like, in the end, like, I don't really care. Like, they dominated the basketball game. There was no getting around that. They do what they honestly do to bad teams. They do not F around with bad teams. They just beat the ever-living doors off them.
Yeah. But I'm not worried about it. I'm not worried about it.
I do think what's interesting is you and I believe we both gave A-minuses last week, right? I know I gave an A-minus. I'm nearly certain you did too.
Yeah.
And so I think when you look at midseason grades, because Pelton's computer gives them an A, I believe at CBS y'all also did a ranking.
Yeah, we gave them an A as well. I mean, that seems to be kind of the universal grade for the Grizzlies.
And so I think what it really shows is, well, what was your expectation? Because I don't know if you and I thought, hey, they're going to be fighting for the 2 seed again. But I think both of us comfortably thought, I know I did, I thought they were going to be, I thought they'd avoid the play-in. I thought they'd be a top 6 team. And I thought the West would be jumbled up. And what we've seen is the West is jumbled up. It's just jumbled up behind the Grizzlies.
Yeah, I would actually say the rest of the West has been slightly worse than expected. I thought there would be more contender quality type of teams that had emerged and sort of planted their flag as legitimate title contenders at this point. If you looked around the NBA media landscape going into the season, people were saying, well, the Grizzlies are going to end up in the play-in. They just need to focus on getting back to the playoffs, maybe 45 wins, you know. Whereas those of us who were in the market or familiar with the franchise are thinking, I don't know, those seem like kind of low expectations when think about the Grizzlies pre-Ja suspension and pre-Ja injury. You're thinking 50 wins easy and Western Conference semifinals at minimum. So I don't know where that disconnect occurred, but the rest of the NBA national landscape wasn't tracking with what we were expecting here locally.
And also, I think to your point, the NBA, I feel like, and particularly NBA coverage, I think more so than any other league, it's prisoner of the moment. And it's kind of like, what was the last thing that you saw? And it's how you wind up during the playoffs getting Anthony Edwards is now the next Michael Jordan. Like, it's how we get there. But I really think, like, part of the reason why you and I would be slightly lower, I mean, we're talking about the difference between A and an A minus. So it's not like you and I are going through and being overly critical. But I think what it really, I think, like, when you look at, okay, like, what's the difference between our opinion and the national opinion? It really just boils down to me. It's like, what were your expectations? And like, to your point, the only way that I thought the Grizzlies would be in trouble, it's like, okay, if they're going to get a significant injury to Ja, Jaren, or Dez, and Ja's been banged up and he's missed games, but we haven't had the season ender. And Jaren has been shocked. You know, I mean, like, that's the other thing. We would have always thought Jaren would be the injury risk, you know, when he first got drafted. Jaren's been remarkably healthy, and like, that's one of the calling cards of him right now. Is it's part of the reason why you and I thought he's been the first half MVP, is because in the end, ability is the best availability, or availability is the best ability, and he's been there for the Grizzlies. And Dez is now starting to round into form. And
yeah, man, he is playing super, super good basketball as of late. I mean, he was a little to start the season, but man, he's rounding into form. You just go and look at his last 7 or 8 games. He's been on a tear.
I thought the oblique injury really impacted him, because even when he came back, I thought his shot was a little bit off. And I'm sure, like, that stands to reason. Like, if you pull your oblique, like, that impacts you every single time you shoot. But now he's like back to the form that we've known Dez to be. And so I think that's kind of the larger question, which is, we all agree that this season so far has been a success. When you look at the Grizzlies, do you still believe that they're a contender? Like, to me, like, that's the key distinction.
Yeah, without a doubt. Here's a nugget for you. This is from my colleagues at CBS. When Ja Morant, Desmond Bane, and Jaren Jackson Jr. are on the floor together, which, I mean, mind you, doesn't happen.
I was gonna say happens once every 6 months, but yeah, continue.
but let's imagine a hypothetical world where that happens in the playoffs, right?
For a whole series.
Right. If that could happen, boy, that'd be great. But in those rare moments, when they've been on the floor together this season. The Grizzlies are outscoring their opponents by 21.8 points per 100 possessions. So when the three of those guys play together, basically you don't have a chance in a seven-game series against the Grizzlies. You know, first round, second round, once you get later into the playoffs, sure, like maybe that edge and that distinction is mitigated by the quality of the opposition. But I mean, that is best in the NBA. I mean, that's really, really good. That's the best in the NBA for any trio that has played at least 250 minutes together. So they've at least hit that threshold, even if they've not often all been healthy at the same time. So that's your potential, right? That shows you why the answer to that question for me is yes, I do believe the Grizzlies are a contender. It's just a matter of getting to the finish line healthy. And that's kind of always been the biggest question.
250 minutes. By my quick math, like let's say they play 30 minutes a game. Let's look what they're averaging. We're talking about what, 8 games?
Well, yeah, but you're not always playing those minutes together. Like,
for sure.
Taylor's going to stagger them. So, you know, I don't know what it is off the top of my head, but I'd venture to guess it's well less than half of their games that they've played this season where all three of those guys have been healthy and available at the same time.
And yeah, I think the other question, I guess, with the contender is it seems likely at this point Oklahoma City's going to run away and hide with the number one seed. Maybe I am being a hater. I still am at the point with Oklahoma City where it's like, I'm not convinced that this is going to, like, that this is all academic and they're just headed to the finals. Like, I am going to need to see, I'm going to need to see them get over the hurdle in the Western Conference final or in the Western Conference playoffs, because they're basically at the same point that the Grizzlies were 2 seasons ago.
Young. They're young. Yeah. And they're not super big either.
And now, obviously, they've added Hartenstein and they've added new pieces, and perhaps Shea is playing at a different level. But I'm kind of at the point where it's like, I need to see it. And beyond that, it's like, I think there are some matchup problems for the Grizzlies. Like, there's certain teams that I would prefer not to see in the playoffs. But kind of, if we're just saying, like, can they beat anyone in the West? It's like, I think so. And so, like, at that point, I think you have to just say, like, by default, they're a contender. Like, they're not the best contender. They're not the biggest contender, but they're in the fight.
Without a doubt. I mean, you go and look at some of the potential first-round matchups for the Grizzlies now. If they are to finish as a 2-3-4 seed, you know, you could be looking at playing the Kings, theoretically. Well, they off their coach, you know, midway through the season. Do we think that Doug Christie as an interim is going to lead them to playoff?
Shout out Pepperdine.
Francher? You know, I mean, yeah, shout out Waves. Shout out Church of Christ of, Notre Dame of the Church of Christ.
Yes, of course.
But you look at the Timberwolves. They went out and, like, voluntarily made themselves worse by getting rid of Karl Anthony Towns. So, I mean, come on. Like, I feel like the other teams in the West are not reaching the preseason expectations. Of course, everybody in the media thought the Lakers were going to be fantastic, right? Well, they have LeBron James and Anthony Davis.
As
they
a tradition, yeah.
Crypto.com Arena, and we devote more resources to covering them than any other team in the league, so surely they're going to be great, right? Oh, wait, no, they're not. They're going out and making some desperation trade for Dorian Finney-Smith as if that's going to save their season, right? So, no. Also, I might be a delusional Tennessee fan who does not know basketball, because Dalton Connect, boy, he's kind of fallen off a cliff here the last month or so. After I went out there and stuck my neck out there for him and said that, insinuated that perhaps the Grizzlies would have been wiser to select Dalton Connect over Zach Edey. Zach Edey's mostly been good, but he's been quiet too. But anyway, no, I don't know.
Other than McLean, who's hurt, right? Has there been a
Jared McCain? He's hurt. Yeah. So yeah, I mean, Jalen Wells is your rookie of the year now. It's not even close.
It's interesting because you had pointed this out last week on the program. We have an avid listener that tweeted at me last night. He's like, I'm at the game and the Grizzlies are about to start 2 rookies. He's like, is there even another contender that starts 1? And I was like, well, it kind of depends on your definition of contender. But, like, if we're talking about teams that are in, like, the top 5 of either conference, it's like, no. And I do think that's another part, though, of the Grizzlies equation, because I think we all feel pretty confident, like, this team's going to probably finish no worse than 4th. Like, when you start to do the math, the numbers are kind of working in there. Like, they'd have to have a pretty significant collapse to probably fall below 4. It's possible, but the math really starts to work against them, or for them, I should say. But there is, like, this question of when you get to the playoffs, like, is this going to be a team that was built to win a lot of games in the regular season, but maybe not have as much playoff success.
Well, think about last year, Derek Lively playing rotation level minutes for the Mavericks going deep to the NBA Finals. Why does that work? It works because you got the vets around him and the superstars who have been through their battles, right? So that's what I see when I see the Grizzlies. Do I totally trust in Jalen Wells and Zach Edey to be starter level players for them in a playoff series? Not exactly, but I'd like to think that. What did Jaren say a week or two ago? He had a quote basically to the effect of like, we're not the young kids anymore. Like we're
it was like swaggy vets or like
swaggy vets, right?
Something
we're swaggy
like that,
vets,
yeah.
You know. So it's the swaggy veteran status, hopefully of the trio of Ja, Dez, and Jaren. And then, you know, we'll see. Is Marcus Smart still a part of that mix? I think he would be tremendously beneficial in a playoff series because you are going to be relying on Jalen Wells and Zach Edey, or at least one of those guys, I would think, come playoff time. And that's not ideal. But if you got the vets around them, I don't think it eliminates them from contending.
And I think that actually begs the other question, which is, are we maybe overthinking it? Because really what it boils down to is the statistic that you gave out. How are Jaren and Dez, are they healthy? Are they playing well? And it's like, they're going to go as far as they do. And like, it's like, sometimes you do have to remember, like, just keep it simple, like distill it down. It's like the rest of it are kind of like bit pieces that you're working around, and the better they play, the better. But it's like, it's really largely going to be defined by how do those three guys play.
Yeah, and that's why you also do wonder, are the Grizzlies going to make a move before the deadline, which is coming up in 2 weeks, right? Because they have an embarrassment of depth. Now we're on the cusp of seeing Gigi Jackson, you know, fully available.
Yeah.
You know, what's Vince Williams' timeline? Like, there's still pieces out there who they really don't even need right now that are on their way back. And so it just begs the question, is there a move to be made? Because the depth is nice during the regular season.
Yes.
It'll help you get to where you want to go in terms of the Western Conference standings, but you don't need 13 rotation level guys in the playoffs. But from a sentimentality standpoint, like I don't want them to trade anybody. I like all these guys. These players are all part of the team, right? Like to me, I look at each one of them, even down to John Conchar and old Jitty, and I'm like, man, like you've done things to help this team succeed this season. I don't necessarily want to see you leave and walk out the door, right? But you know, I understand obviously like it could be in their best interest to try to bolster the roster in some way.
Yeah, you can talk me into consolidation might raise their ceiling a little bit, come playoff time specifically. But then there's the question of like, okay, maybe getting a little bit better for the playoffs might make you worse in the regular season. And this does feel like a year where we're going to be looking at the standings, and I feel like there's going to be certain matchup. Like, I think you're going to be more concerned about who you could be matched up with in the first round rather than just exactly where you finish in the standings. But to your point, I really think like when you start looking around, and the internet obviously always has the same ideas for trades, it feels to me like their quote unquote deadline moves are going to be getting Vince Williams back and then getting Marcus Smart back.
Yeah, and you guess how much you have to give up for that?
Zero.
Not a zilch. That's addition without subtraction. I mean, it's just straight up addition. You don't have to do any cap math on that. So that's great. And that gives you some of that physicality that you need on the wing to hang with a team like a Houston, to hang with some of these bigger, more bruising types of squads. Because, you know, Vince Williams is a tough dude. Gigi Jackson's got some good size. So, you know, that could be the answer.
Yeah, I think also to your other point about like other teams in the West and kind of the expectations. So last year, Denver and the Nuggets finished tied for first, but the Thunder won the tiebreaker because of head-to-head at 57 wins. 56 wins was the T-Wolves, and then fourth was 51. So like what we're kind of looking at right now when you start to like game it out, it's like, the two seed could wind up being 52, 53 wins, and that goes to like your larger point. The West in general probably hasn't been as strong top to bottom. It's been competitive, but I don't know if like there's been the top end success.
Yeah, you do worry though. To the teams to me that I look at and don't want to see in the first round of a playoff series are probably Dallas and Phoenix. because of the sheer amount of high-end all-star talent that is on those rosters. You think about a Phoenix team with Kevin Durant and Bradley Beal and Devin Booker, and you think about a Dallas team with Luka Doncic.
What are you talking about? Jimmy Butler.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I can't wait to see that one work out. So he's suspended for missing a team flight, from what I understand, right?
I think he's trying to pull a Costanza. I think he's trying to get fired.
I would be so fed up right now, man. Like, if I were Jimmy Butler's teammate, and that's at the top of the list of reasons why I have no interest in bringing him into a really nice Grizzlies culture.
Well, I mean, if there were only some evidence to suggest that this was possible, you know, this right? just came out of nowhere. Like, Jimmy Butler being unhappy in a situation, who could have ever foreseen that?
Never would have seen that coming.
But, I don't know, weirdly, I'm not that scared of the Suns. I keep coming back to, it's like, I've always thought Beal was a lot of empty stats. Like, Beal was someone that I admired as a human being. Like, always got the bag. If you've ever been in, like, a move, like, never really wanting to move because moving sucks. Like, forever, he was just like, I'm just kind of cool here. Like, you know, we like it here.
Get my 30 again.
Yeah, like, I just don't really want to move. Like, I'm cool. So, like, there was an aspirational vibe that I appreciated. But, like, I was never his biggest fan. Like, that was always, I feel like, Grizzlies Twitter was like, they always wanted Beal. And I was like, I'm just not really there with everyone else.
Hey, in his defense, sometimes it is more fun to be the best player on a
Absolutely.
Bad team. than to be the third or fourth guy on a good team.
Winning is stressful.
Yeah. He never beat the guy who has the ball in his hands and gets up 30 shots a game.
Who wants attention?
Right.
Like, you know what I mean? Like,
hey, and if you make the playoffs, think about how much more work.
That's more time.
I mean, come on, you could have to play 28 more games. That's like, would any of us agree and sign up for? Yeah, we're gonna add.
You gotta 20%. Be in shape for a whole another 2 or 3 months,
and then your off season is cut down by 6 weeks.
That sucks. So it's
like, well, like, what? Yeah, if you don't really care about winning, then it's probably hard to make it as a professional athlete if you don't really care about winning. But if you don't really care about winning, who among us would sign up to have an additional 15% added to our workload on an annual basis? That's what you're doing if you make a playoff run. So I respect Bradley Beal. He's saying, you know what?
You said 30 million, right? Yeah, I'm gonna go do that.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I'm gonna do that. All right. Anything else Grizzlies wise that you want to empty the clip on?
I mean, I know. I just think that, like, the local vibe is lower than the national vibe on the Grizzlies. Nationally, they're getting their flowers, and maybe we ought to pay attention to that a little bit, because I know we're deep into the minutiae of it. If we watch every game, we've been following the franchise for years. If we knew that last year was more of an anomaly than anything, and other people forgot that, like, there's context to it. But man, I think sometimes you pull up Grizzlies Twitter or whatnot, and it's like the sky is falling. And man, I'm guilty of it sometimes too. You know, we've had discussions on here throughout the first half of the season where I've pointed at things that I thought were issues, and we've spent more time on that than talking about the positives. But if you're looking at it halfway through the season with trade deadline coming up, like, I don't see how you can't be fairly pleased with where this franchise is at.
Yeah, and I don't even necessarily think that it's overtly negative. I really think it goes back to the initial idea. I think most Grizzlies fans thought that they would be good this year. And so I think they're starting with a higher baseline, and so they're being more critical. And then I think the other thing that is certainly impacting is a question of, it feels like we've solidly answered they can beat up on bad teams. Like, we know that. But I think there's still in the back of everyone's mind of, how do they match up when they go up against the other actually good teams? And for a while, it was pretty mediocre. It started to trend better, honestly. But I still think in the back of everyone's mind, they lost to Houston 3 times.
Yeah, right. Like that. There's another game against the Rockets coming up, I think, fairly soon after
they moved it. Yeah, they moved it to TNT as well. Is it next Thursday?
Like, yeah, no, actually, it's before the deadline. It's on January 30th. So that's going to be on TNT, National Showcase, coming up right before the deadline. That game is coming up in just a little over. No, it's a week from today.
Yeah.
So that's a big one.
It is Thursday.
Yeah. So, I think that would be a tremendous kind of boost to the energy around the team if they could kind of start to win some of those games against those thornier upper echelon Western Conference opponents.
All All right, then the other story that I want to discuss with you a little bit is we knew yesterday ESPN sent us the PR numbers for the championship game from Monday night, but we now have the Nielsen breakdown. I am citing John Lewis of Sports Media Watch. Monday's Ohio State-Notre Dame College Football Playoff National Championship averaged a combined 22.1 million viewers across the Nielsen-rated ESPN networks, marking the fifth least-watched national title game since the debut of the CFP predecessor, the Bowl Championship Series, in 1998. Also important to note, the BCS was always on ABC, so network. Network's always going to be an inflated number. But the number that I really care about is it was down 12% from last year. And so I think really for me, the bigger question is, why is that? And I think there are several factors, but I'm curious to know which theory that you buy into the most. Number one, let's lay it out. Midwest teams. Like, you know, even though Notre Dame isn't in the Big Ten, Big Ten-esque, you know what I mean? So Midwest, Central, and even though Notre Dame has a very national brand and Ohio State's a massive national brand, they're still Midwest teams.
Yeah, you're kind of fighting over some of the same TV sets there.
Correct. The other couple of theories, number one, probably the one I subscribe to, I think it took too long, and you were swallowed up by divisional weekend, and the inauguration was also on Monday. And like I would consider myself to be on the right side of the sports junkie bell curve, if you will, pretty far to the right. And I even found myself on Monday night being like, man, I'm tired. Like, I've watched so much football. Like, I'm just kind of tired. Still watched every snap, but you know what I mean? Like, I found myself thinking, like, why didn't we just do this a little bit earlier? And then I think perhaps the other theory, I guess, that's kind of floating around is, well, the 12-team playoff didn't really deliver. And so people were checked out.
No, it delivered because it gave you Ohio State, Notre Dame. There's not three or four matchups, maybe, but three or four that you could find that a TV executive would prefer over Notre Dame, Ohio State. Sure, as you mentioned, they're both Midwest. So in an ideal scenario, could you put Ohio State versus Florida, for example? That would get you into the state of Florida on more TVs in a highly populated state. Maybe that one would be more desirable than Ohio State, Notre Dame. But come on, I mean, Notre Dame has fans all over the country. Ohio State has one of the largest alumni bases in the country. So the idea that the matchup was the problem, I don't buy that at all. What I do buy, though, is there is fatigue coming out of a long NFL playoff weekend. And by January 19th or whatever day the game was, people aren't in college football mode anymore. They've moved on. The rest of the country has moved on. The rest of the country, I have the data to back this up because I can see it on our website. The rest of the country, in terms of college football fans, they care about who their team is getting from the portal. They care about next year's top 25. They care about next year's schedule. They don't care about the two teams that are left that, you know, in a playoff that they haven't been playing in. So, yeah, it does last too long. College football needs to be over first or second week in January at the latest. They're dragging it out. I mean, that's the truth of the matter. By having Army-Navy stand alone, by protecting these conference championship games, trying to put 10 to 14 days in between all these bowls, like you're dragging out college football longer than it needs to go.
Do you think if we would have played this game last Thursday or even last Friday? Now, this is the other aspect of ESPN owns the event, so I don't know the mechanics. Friday night is ESPN's NBA night, and I don't know contractually if they can just sit there and go, we're moving the playoff to Friday night. Like, I'm sure TNT would say, we'll take the inventory off your hands and we'll show the NBA that night, but like, I don't know the mechanics of how their deals work, what they can and can't do on a Friday. I kind of liked the Final Four being Thursday and Friday before Wild Card Weekend. Like, it kind of felt like it had its own juice, and then you don't get swallowed up by the NFL. Like, I just kind of think that's the other part of this is you just really realize, like, if the NFL wants to swallow up anything, it's like college football is the number two sport but it's still the number two sport.
Like, yeah, and it's no, not even no shame threatening in that.
Yeah,
like there's no shame in being the number two.
You're still, by being the number two sport, you're still on average ratings. You're still probably double the next sport.
Yeah, but it's a problem when a Notre Dame Ohio State matchup that was actually more competitive than some of your other recent national title.
We had a second half where we didn't really know for sure who was going to win. We were pretty confident Ohio State's going to win, but it got squirrely.
Sure. So last season's game between Michigan and Washington, that's an inferior matchup on brand because Washington pales in comparison to Notre Dame. You could say Ohio State and Michigan are probably about an equal draw. This game is more competitive on Monday night, but does lower ratings. That is problematic, but I don't think it's the 12-team playoff is to blame. I think if nothing else, the ratings we've seen over the last few weeks bear out the reality that you can't give this country enough college football, because even some of the non-playoff bowls, meaning less now than ever before, outperform their ratings from the past few seasons. So,
I mean, I think you and I talked about it. It was a sneaky good bowl season. Like it crept up on us, but it's like there were a good amount of good games.
The contractual crackdown on opt-outs has been key to sustain.
And if you did have opt-outs, you had teams like LSU where, okay, maybe some of the big-name guys were opting out, but you had these young, talented guys that were like basically using it as a showcase, being like, hey, boys, pay up.
Yeah, no doubt. It was a great college football postseason. I went through and ranked all 11 CFP games today at CBSSports.com. And it started out weak, man. The first round was bad. It was unattractive, and it got us off to a bad start, but it got better as it went along. The quarterfinals were competitive. The semifinals were awesome, phenomenal games. And then the championship game, it wasn't an instant classic, but it was better than the last two championship games, yet does lower ratings. That's a problem. It's a confluence of factors, as we've talked about. But, you know, I think the inauguration and MLK Day, they didn't help, you know, because a lot of TVs that might normally just be resting on ESPN by default were resting on CNN or Fox News or whatever channel you were
watching. Whatever your network was, yeah.
Or TNT if you're watching the Grizzlies get
or
a Sports MLK
Network.
Day win. Yeah, there you go.
I always listen to mine. I don't know if this is a trend or something to... Maybe this was an anomaly. I don't know how you felt, but I did feel like every round kind of lost a little bit of steam. And maybe that's also because the novelty of the on-campus playoff game, and we started off with Notre Dame, and like, man, there was some iconic imagery. Like and we saw how fired up everyone was. Like the atmospheres were pretty awesome. And so I just felt like every round kind of lost a little steam, but I don't know if that's something that's like a problem to address. That might have just been a characteristic of this playoff.
I think we're just also creatures of habit.
Oh, there's no one thing COVID and the pandemic, it like 100% nailed down for me is the sports calendar is actually important. Like we need the calendar, we need the repetition. It is amazing when you just throw it off a little bit how much it like messes with us.
What did the Masters do in ratings when they moved it to November during COVID and Dustin Johnson won it?
Well, allegedly the Masters.
Paled in comparison. Yeah, it's not even the same thing.
Dustin
anymore.
Won a soft Masters. Come on.
Yeah, he was teary-eyed after he won it, so I guess it meant something to him. If you can make Dustin Johnson cry, then you put on something that's real, you know? Like, I'll say that.
Yeah. I think probably he just knew, like, this is going to be, like, I'm getting another boat.
And now I'm going to LIV, and this is going to be
This is just like another, like, Phil's eventually going to get some of the Saudi cash, and now my price tag just went up. Like, I think DJ was probably crying for that. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, Eric Hasseltine joins the program next. We'll get his thoughts on the Grizzlies. They will return to action tomorrow night. We'll talk about it with him next, right here on Jeffrey Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Eric Aston is the Memphis Grizzlies Radio Network play-by-play announcer. Kind enough to join us each and every Thursday on the program. Eric, as I was listening to the highlights of your call last night, what was the line that
you're
using?
Why would you do that to yourself?
Well, no, I do. I do love you. I was a fan before I was a friend, so that's the God's honest truth. What's the new one that you've been using for three-pointers, cracking the nets?
I say crack the cords.
Crack the cords. I was all in on that one.
Yeah. Okay.
I love that.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd still ring it up, put three on the board, but, you know.
Tickles the twine. Tickles the twine. It's because it sounds like when you hear a swish in the microphone,
yeah.
It sounds like a crack. So, like, if it's done right, if the nets are right and the ball goes to your right, it's that snapping sound.
What's...
But there's nothing that goes with snap, so it cracks the cords kind of...
What's the better...
I came up with that years ago.
No, I loved it. What's the better sports sound, though? That pure swish that you're talking about, or when you're at a Major League Baseball game, the crack of a bat of the home run. Like, a home run has a different sound.
It does. In fact, I will never, ever forget. I can see it. This is the way my mind works. When I moved to my dad's house in 1987, I had lived with my mom from 5th through 8th grade. We were in Sacramento, and I moved back to the Bay Area because, you know, these things happen in divorced families, which are much more common in California than here, obviously. But I wanted to live with my dad. And so during the summer, he lived on this hill, and then he had built his dream house on with his whatever she was. Partner, horrible human being. Another story for another day. And he asked me if I would paint the fence. Like, they had this white fence going up to this house, and I was like, well, yeah, I can do that. I'm not doing anything. And I was listening to A's baseball every day.
Yeah.
Because they had day games back then a lot. And that was Mark McGwire's rookie year. And he was trying to catch the rookie record. And there was something at the time he was tracking it down, and I'm listening, and I will never forget hearing, I thought the radio broke. The crack was so loud. I literally thought the speaker popped. And you just knew. I'm like, well, that's a home run. And that sound, just, I can still hear that sound, that deep crack. And when you hear that, I love the sound of a swish. There's nothing like being at a ball game, and if you're maybe not looking right at it, when you hear that sound, you're like, uh-oh, that one's going a long way, or that was just absolutely tattooed. So I got to go baseball. I got to go baseball. It's barely, but I give the edge to baseball.
Are we missing any other sports sounds? Like, to me, I've always thought those are the top two, and I'm with you.
That's the thing. You can't hear it in, like, real time or on television or radio, but I was fortunate when I covered the Raiders. They let you on the field the final 2 minutes of every game.
Yeah.
And a couple of those games were close. That's when Rich Gannon was quarterbacking, and so the Raiders were really good. I mean, the year of the Tuck Rule, I covered that team. That's the team I was covering when I got the job here. When you would be on the field, even at practice, and when a quarterback would just absolutely throw a dart, you could hear it whistle.
Yeah, it's the same. Seams of a baseball is the same. Yeah. When you hear a guy throw a real fastball, that the seams cutting through the air, it's the same thing, though. You're right.
Exactly. And so, yeah, that sound, I like that sound. I liked being on the field when I played, playing summer ball and with these guys from college, and we had a guy that was a closer at South Carolina play with us one summer, and some idiot thought he could hit him, and he did the whole natural thing. I think I'll tell you the story another time, but the last pitch he threw, when he told him, I'm throwing a fastball and you can pay me in the parking lot the $10 you're about to owe me, the whistle and the pop of the catcher's glove together is another special one. Hearing that football, you hear the tackles down on the field, and it sounds like a train wreck, but I can't think of anything other than, like, I guess in hockey, if a guy hits a slap shot pure, you can tell. But it's still not guaranteed to go in. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Same thing in soccer. If you watch the World Cup, you can tell when a guy got his foot into it. Like, you can hear that thud, but that doesn't mean it's going to score. You hear that crack of the bat, and it's going to take a miraculous play for it not to go out of the yard or not be a laser somewhere for an extra base hit.
Eric, I feel like I learned a lot about you over the last few minutes. Appreciate you you opening up to us a little bit. How much fun are you having with this team?
I mean, you can charge me the $80 an hour for psychology treatment later.
I got to think you're having a blast calling this team's games this season.
It's fun. It's a lot of fun. You know, obviously, everybody thought last year was – I got that question so much. And, you know, look, I'm always – I think you guys understand this, and I heard Jason and John talking earlier today about, you know, people listening and how Jason was razzing John about getting out into the neighborhood. And I'm like, wait, I see him all the time. I can tell you exactly where he hangs out, but I'm not going to do that. And I'm always amazed when people say they listen, just because there are so many other things for people to do. So it's flattering. And if they like what you're doing, that's even more flattering. But everybody has the same question about last year, and that how hard was that? It was easy because you knew what the script was. You knew what was going to happen. It was easy. You knew those guys were outmanned. They were a bunch of young guys fighting to prove that they belong in the league, and they would fight, and they would scratch, and they would claw, and they would get it into the third and fourth quarter somewhat close, and you're trying to close a game with Trey Jemison and Scotty and Gigi and, you know, Mal Pereira and Tosan Awoma, who are guys that are, you know, end of the roster guys, and you're closing against James Harden, Paul George, and Kawhi Leonard, and Ivica Zubac and Russell Westbrook, and you're like, oh, that's how this is going to go. So it wasn't hard because those guys never left an ounce of energy, you know, unspent. And so this year's more fun because now you have the actual roster, and they're also not leaving an ounce of energy unspent. But to see guys like Jay Huff get an opportunity and talking to him after, Luke Kennard, who seemingly at one point earlier this year had kind of fallen out of the rotation, he was struggling a little bit, figured it out, and now he's playing lights out. Desmond Bain coming off of that oblique, and watching the ball movement. When the ball moves with this team, it's what basketball should be. And I think even national pundits are talking about, we talked about the, I think it was the Tuesday night TNT crew talking about how they hate the way teams just hunt threes and they don't play an offense and it's a shooting contest. And someone said, well, the Thunder don't play like that. And then somebody else said, well, the Grizzlies don't play like that either. And they don't. Do they sometimes pass up layups for threes? Yeah. Is it infuriating at times? Yeah, a couple times. It's been frustrating. But to see them fight through what they did on Monday and win a game like that, twice against that team now, by the way, where they just tried to physical it up and slow it down, and then to watch them last night, seeing Jalen Wells take cheap shot, and I'm going to call it what it is. I thought they were cheap shots on the pick from Josh Green. I thought he kept throwing an extra elbow, a shoulder. You know, LaMelo Ball is doing what he can to get free. And it's that veteran that's going to be an all-star that's leading the league in scoring, and a young guy gets in, you know, gets into a space on defense, and the veteran's kind of like, what are you doing? We don't do this in this league. And it's like, yeah, you're supposed to. And Jalen Wells didn't care. So, yeah, it's a blast because the poise of the young guys, the development of Jaren, seeing Ja play at times freely, he's figured it out. Now he's figuring out how to play with these guys. Yeah, Cobb, it's a blast, man. And the best thing about it is there's no egos. Like, you walk on that plane, and there's no, like, there's other teams, and I don't want to say who, but the Thunder, who back in the day, you couldn't talk to their players. Like, if in my position, you were not supposed to even say hello to a player. When I walk to my seat on the plane, I walk by Santi and Luke and John Conchar, and then they'll add another one in there. They have a table there, and then the guys up front. If they see you, they say hello. If you're walking up to the plane with them, you talk. I see Scotty, and I'm like, man, how's your head? You went head-to-head with Chris Paul the other night, San Antonio. You good? And he's like, yeah, just kind of stung a little bit, but no concussion. And you couldn't even do that. But with these guys, you can. And that makes our job easier, for one, and two, more fun. Like, Jaren comes back to our side of the plane all the time and just, you know, chops it up with the training staff and then says hello to us. And Ja gets on the bus and, you know, fist bumps people. And Dez is, I've known Dez for, obviously since he was a rookie, and have had some dealings with him off the court. So we've become, somewhat closer than just player broadcaster. And he's always like talking about it. We talk about each other's kids, and it's that atmosphere. It's the culture we talk about that they've built. And then you throw in some new coaches, and, they're great. I knew Jason March before. I knew nothing of Tuomas Masiasalo. And, Taylor's great about making sure we all get to know each other at some point early in the season, having dinner together. And I sat next to Coach Masiasalo, and just hearing his story of being a basketball player in Finland and coaching all over the world, and now he's in Memphis. Like, this dude was in Paris last year. And now he's in Memphis. Talk about your all-time, that's a totally different culture. And he's loving it. And just the joy that people bring to the job every day, it's infectious. So it's fun. It's why when people were talking about, do they need to make a change at the top? Do they need to change coaches? I was like, no, that's not the problem. The problem was health and injuries in both playoff series when they were the two seeds. They were out. Ja was out. And then the Laker one with Adams and Clark out. And then last year it was injuries to everybody. Now you're seeing a team that's even been injured. They've got the third best record in the West and only a half game behind the second best record. And they're playing great basketball. When they're healthy, they're going to be a problem. They're going to be a problem.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned Monday, because I was thinking about this. I made the joke on Twitter. Like, when the Timberwolves go to bed at night, they check under their bed for the Grizzlies. I cannot really remember, like, the Grizzlies have had back and forth rivalries, but like, I can't really remember a team where it's like, the Grizzlies just kind of get in their head. And this, like, we've seen other teams, like I think the Rockets kind of get into the Grizzlies' heads. Can you think of another team where like the Grizzlies have just had their number? Like almost like, to this level, if you will.
Well, in recent years, San Antonio. Even when the Spurs fell off, but as the Grizzlies got better and the Spurs were taking steps back, I think it was an opening night game. Who might have been out of the COVID year, the first game out of the COVID year, and San Antonio.
Yeah, I remember this.
Pounded them.
Yeah,
it was a high pick and roll clinic. And after that, the Grizzlies won like 13 in a row, to the point where people are in San Antonio are like, "Hey, like take it easy on us," and I'm like, what are you talking about? Like,
we got decades here. We got decades to take out on you.
Yeah, like you guys got mad about winning one playoff series, and Greg Popovich would run up the score. You got some comeuppance coming your way. You got some payback coming.
We're still in the red.
Yeah, like badly. So I think in terms of getting in, that's the one that lately. But the Minnesota one, and you can hear it. Like it's wild. We were sitting. Our broadcast position in Minnesota is like right over an exit tunnel. It's right in front of a suite. It's actually a great spot to see the game. And when they won that game in Minnesota on that road trip to kick it off, you could hear fans going out. It's like, man, we just can't beat those things I can't say on the radio right now. And you're like, wow. That's kind of accurate. Like you go out in your Grizzly gear, and they're like, "Yeah, you're a nice guy, but we don't like that team." And they don't like them because they can't beat them, and they've got talent. And yet, people are. It's a friendly rivalry. It's not like when the Dylan Brooks, Gary Payton thing happened, and I was walking back from practice, and everybody told me I was number one in San Francisco, and I couldn't figure out what I had done so well until I realized which finger they were holding up. And then I realized,
one finger salute.
One.
Yeah.
You don't like me. Okay. And it was because I was wearing my Grizzly stuff. So it's different. But yeah, the game against the Wolves, man, it's another case where they throw everything they can at you, length, physicality, and you find a way to win. And those are the games that this team needed. Like, they needed those. They struggled in that game in Oklahoma City for obvious reasons. They had some key guys out. They struggled in the last two losses to Houston. The first game, they had a lead, and that turned into a whitewash, and it was still figuring out the offense. I throw that out of the window. I think we talked about it, you guys, I said, give this offense at least 15, 20 games before you pass any judgments. And it took fast. They took to it faster than I expected. So that first month, I was like, yeah, if they win, they win. If they lose, they lose. Just be 500, and then when it clicks, you'll be good.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just winning those games, because if you go look and there's a they hand you a stat packet at every game in the game notes, and they show in one of the superlatives page what the margins of victory are. And you look at the Grizzlies, and there's very few victories at 6 points or less. Everything's like 10 and up, 11 and up. Then you get into the 20s, and they're like one of the top teams in terms of number of wins by 20 or more this year. When they win, they blow the doors off you. And that was happening yesterday, and then they kind of just eased up. And I understand that. You're up 30. You got the game.
We've thrown out a blanket apology. If anyone out there had Grizzlies minus 12.5, we did say that we give them an air hug through the airwaves.
Oh, yeah. That's
a tough one.
Yeah, that's going to be on bad beats. Defense kind of went out the window.
Yeah.
Up 76. Yeah. But I think it's good for them to win those games that are – In the mud, so to speak. They're slowed down by physicality. And you can see Charlotte was trying to do that last night. Foul, maybe get into the penalty, and then foul a couple times to slow the game down, get you to catch your breath. Problem is the Grizzlies were too good for them yesterday. And that's, you know, part of Charlotte's redevelopment, part of the fact that the 6th overall pick is 19 years old and raw and not in the lineup helping them. The number 2 pick from last year is out with an injury. Grant Williams is out. Trey Mann is out. They're going through injuries. But the Grizzlies, I thought it was such a business-like approach yesterday after a good win. You had the worry of, is there going to be a letdown? You look at this team's record. They're coming in. They're not very good, even though they've won 3 straight. They don't have all their pieces. Are you going to kind of lay off the gas pedal? Man, the way they came out and went back and forth and went right at them, that showed a level of maturity that is continuing to develop that teams that can make deep runs have.
All right, Eric, we appreciate it, my man.
I appreciate you guys. I'll talk to you next Thursday.
That is Eric Hasseltine. Grizzlies taking on the Pelicans tomorrow night at FedEx Forum. Of course, you can hear the game right here on 92.9 FM ESPN. Pregame at 6:30 with Jessica Benson, and then Eric will have tip-off at 7 o'clock. Zen Sports just picked another grand prize winner, this time for the big game sweepstakes in December, and now they're rolling out the VIP Players Club sweepstakes for January, and the prizes are raised to a whole new level. This month, one grand prize winner will win a $10,000 bonus bet on the NFL big game in February and $10,000 cash, or you can take an alternative prize of $15,000 cash. You have the ability to earn entries on every bet you place in January and every dollar you wager. Plus, earn 10 times the entries on all parlay bets. It doesn't get much better than this. And if you don't win the grand prize, don't worry. You'll still also have a shot to win one of 5 smaller prizes, which grant you either a $1,000 bonus bet on the big game or a $250 cash prize. Also, for all customers who sign up with code JeffTN, JeffTN, you will receive 500 bonus entries in addition to the entries earned from the value of the qualifying bet. Head on over to zensports.com/sweepstakes for a full